session number 23200, reel 9.
Mr. Kitcher, reel 9. Now, in November 44, the 4th Escort Group stopped doing the KMF convoys and went on to patrols round, mainly round Ireland, a bit round Scotland, but mainly round Ireland. What do you remember about that? Because that was a different role. That was a hunter-killer role, wasn't it? You weren't actually escorting anything. You were looking.
Oh, I know. My job was to go and hunt the, what I call it, the subs out, you know, in the... find out, you know, where they were, what I call it, operating from, and so, you know. But mostly, we did round, what I call it, the Irish, what I call it, Bristol Channel, that way, on the Irish coast of what I call Ireland. And what we thought at the time was that a lot of these subs were getting help from Southern Ireland. And they were picking up exactly where the convoys were coming from, and exactly what attack, and this and that, you know. But when we went in to hunt them out, we found out that we couldn't pick them up on what I call it, on either the coast, but we picked them up on packs round Southern Ireland, and we were chasing them different parts and see that. And we used to use a pattern, which was 6 ships an hour, what I call it, escort. There was 3 diesel and 3 steam. 3 diesels used to come from one direction and 3 diesels from the other direction. And we used to come in, do a, what I call it, a pattern of distance, and run a, what I call it, a sound detecting, you know, on different parts of the city, that cross section, that one. And at times you get a load of pings, but mostly what we used to pick up was fish pings, shoals of fish. And what happened was, when we found these things out, we saw the fish and shit, yeah, when things quietened down, and we did pick up a shoal of what I call it, a fish, we used to drop a couple of depth charges, and used to bring the fish up the top. Well, we got a load of fish, and the lads used to enjoy it, you know, hooking and board, you know, for fishermen, you know, it's a bit nice for them to drop the depth charge, and you get more catch than anything else, and we're sick of fish. But as I say, a lot of what I call it, a lot of what I call it, the subs used to, what I call it, knew that we were there, and used to go as close as they could to the, what I call it, Irish border. But we did get a lot of things and a lot of what I call it. But they were hard, what I call it, the hits. We had one or two of them. One particular time, we did hit one, you know. And we got like oil and different things, that one. Whether it was a genuine, what I call it, hit or not, we do not know, because they were very crafty at sending up debris and oil to prove that they are not there, you know, they've been some. But it's like everything else, everybody has the tricks, you know, tricks of the trade, and what we had to find was sure evidence, you know. If we could find parts of bodies all like that, we used to pick them up and bring them abroad, you know, to take. And that used to be part of our proof. But we did, what I call it, a big sweep right round the coast of parts of Scotland as well. And we found out, we found a lot of, what I call it, subs around that area. And he used to dodge with it, you know. And I think it's mostly kept on the coastline, more on that line, you know. They were crafty, yeah. But we were wondering why, when what I call it, in 44, when we were in Europe, how they were getting fed, how everything went. But this day, we still see Southern Ireland help the subs, what I call it, to keep them alive and keep them in fuel in this night, yeah. And I think if Southern Ireland had been at war with Britain, I imagine the war wouldn't have lasted as long, because subs has got to have a depot for to get oil, they've got to have a place to go to, and so on. And I thought at the time If they were at war with Germany, I think the war would have been shortened by a lot more, because it couldn't last the sea. Because it was a long way from the coast of Germany to the Atlantic, and you had to have a place, a base to go to, called the Goto. And I always said that Southern Ireland was mainstay of feeding and oiling these subs, and that's how a lot of people were caught in convoys, lost their lives.
Now, there was some quite bad weather that winter, December, and you were up round Cape Wrath and Pentland Firth. Do you remember the bad weather?
Well, I can remember that, never forget that, you know, because we used to water court, you know, we used to ride the water court, the waves and that, you know, and when you were watching, you know, I mean, other ships used to be lift, the half dead used to lift out, and you saw the screws and that spinning round, you know, and then they were back into a gear, you know. We didn't mind the rough weather, because rough weather, it kept your mind, you know, good. Where a swell, it seemed to hypnotise people, which I thought, you know what I mean, swells are always a thing. It put you off your groom, not me in particular, but put a lot of people off their groom, and it seemed to hypnotise them, you know. The thought more of the body of going up the city there, where, when you got a rough sea, it kept you fresh, and it kept you alert, and it's like, you know. And I think any sailor would say, you know, I mean, you would rather have a rough sea as a swell at any day, you know, because it's one of the worst things in the world is a rough sea, a swell, because it, whatever you have on your stomach, it seems to lift it up, and it's either got to come up or go down, you know. And we went through atrocious weather, and right around the Wurricot, the top of Scotland and places like that, you know, looking for Wurricot, looking for subs, you know. And as time got on, you know, we were, we were told that the Wurricot, the worst company were in there, and that the subs had to be, they were told.
Now in January,
am I jumping too far?
Yeah, you missed out when you sank the U-1051. That was in January. 1945, that's a bit before the war was coming to an end. That's the one where HMS Manners called was talking.
Oh, well, that one.
And that's where the Aylmer sank, rammed it, that you talked off tape. If you tell us about that.
That was the. You want to talk about your Aylmer?
That's the one with the Aylmer. Yeah. Do you remember the whole thing? Where were you? What was your job on the boat at the time?
Well, I was on Wurricut, I was on guns, you know what I mean? Wurricut on both of us, you know? I was on both of us, you know? Well, what happened was, we got what I call it, we were brought to action stations, and what happened was that at the time, you know, it was mostly around about tea time, and we were called brought to action stations, and it went on for about nearly, I think it must have went on for about nearly, 2 to 3 days, you know. At action stations, and we couldn't get down below. We had to stop up. We ate, we slept, you know. We were caught up behind the action stations, you know. And then, as I say, we had come across a pattern of what I call the subs, like a pack. And this, what I call it, this morning when it happened, we came across a ping, and we thought it was a deputy ping. It was a sub at the time. And the skipper turned around and said, right, okay, we'll drop a pattern of what I call it, depth charges. Nothing happened. So we're doing a what I call it, another sweep, coming back over again. In the same area, we've got the same ping again. So what happened again? Dropped another what I call it, pattern of depth charges. Nothing happened. So on a what I call it, the third time we came back, the skipper turned around and decided to drop hedgehogs because he thought the sub was farther down. In what I call the depth charges were doing. So he threw partner depth charges down, and we stopped, we just glided over the top, and the next thing we knew, on the aft end, up comes the sub. Now, when it came up, it leveled itself out. Now, the way it was facing, they couldn't attack us. The only way they could attack us, by gunfire. And for gunfire they had on board the sub, would make no difference to us, because we had better, what I call it, firepower, what they had. So the skipper ordered small arms, the fire, hit the upper structure.
Mostly that, that would include the Bofors, would it?
Yes. Mostly on the gun tower. Now, that was what he... Well, when the sub came up, as I say, the only way we could attack it was attacked by hitting the, what I call the gun tower. We got orders from the bridge for the fire on the gun tower and keep the, what I call it, keep them down below, keep the sub people, the Germans down below the sub, that one. But, what I call it, as far as I was concerned, the sub could never, what I call it, attack us with the torpedoes, because the only thing she had was gunfire. Now, what happened was, at the time, one part of our escort, which was the Alma, had seen it, and she would have called it, she come head on, and she came all flying, guns flying, you know, tooting, what I call it, you know, saying, yeah, I've come to the rescue, you know. And we were on the upper structure, we were all up on what I call it, action station, and we couldn't do nothing at all, but let them come through, and she just came through and hit it, sank it in the middle, and we saw the ship just, the sub automatically turn up, and we saw it just automatically go down, anyway. But before that, we saw, and I still see it this day, those sailors on board our sub were trying to get out, and the light belts, the carly floats, whatever they had, was trying to shove out the hatch. And seeing that, and seeing the sub go down, I thought to myself, what a waste of life. Sheer waste of life. Because I thought they came up to surrender and never had a chance, because we fired on the, what I call it, on the gun tower, which she couldn't come up. The only way she could come up was from the hatch covers, which was seen, and it was, there was light boats, or light boats, but light flats were pushed out the thing up, and we could see that they were, what I call it, coming out. And we don't know what the damage was done at the time, but we could see that the work that came up for a surrender, and they never got a chance. And for what I've seen, I said, what a waste of life. It's a sure waste of life. But what happened to Alma was she got a refit on it because she got damaged, you know. We would have called, we could have done the same thing, but then again, but why waste life if you can save life, you know? Because I wanted to see any of our lads be in the same position and be in the water and knowing someone coming along and either fire on them or another ship come along and sink them. It's a sheer waste, because we know we're fighting against each other, but at the end of the day, if you see a person kind of do nothing to you, I think my opinion is it's to take them prisoner, because I would like to be taken prisoner. Not to be, what I call it, because there's no way in it, what I call it, at sea, where you can turn on and survive unless you've got a good, what I call it, boat you're in, or good supplies, that one. But the way we were, you know, it was a, whether being that rough in this and that era, there's no person could live, you know. But to see, what I call it, to see people killed just through another ship coming along, and It's like watching one of the westerns with John Wayne, and you know, you see him coming along with a cavalry, you know. That's what it looked like, and it's still today, and that's what happened. Sheer waste.
Then, do you remember anything else about any of the other patrols? I think the patrols carried on right through March, January, February, March. Is there anything else before? Because there was another submarine, they sank it on the 8th of April, the U-774. And the Bentinck and the Calder sank her.
Well, that...
But was there anything before that one, would you say?
You see, there's that many... You see, that there's that many, what I call, you know what I mean, the different patterns we had to do, you know, and which was involved in other ships, you know what I mean? They got pings, they, what I call it, they dropped charges, you know. But at the time, you know what I mean, you see, when you, what I call it, when you got three steamships, it's like a pack. When you got three steamships and three diesels, you all seem to get the three steam. They walk together. The three diesels, they walk together. Now, they used to walk on a pattern, if you recall, chasing whatever, but they pinged, you know. So, you know. And we used to do exactly the same thing. And the Bennick, you know what I mean, the Bennick, it was, what I call it, the steamship. And she was a senior one of the, what I call it, of the six ships that went. And different, what I call it, the diesels, they would get, what I call it, results. We got results. But it was one particular time when we would have called tap one sub with the Bendick, you know.
That this would be the one on the 8th of April, 1945.
And what happened there, we got debris up and there we got parts of the human body. And one particular incident was where what I called the where we got a lump of flesh up and the quack, I wouldn't say he was a duck, he was a quack, you know. He came down and inspected it, and he said it was a human lung, you know. And he asked how they could preserve it. He says, well, the only way he could do is put it in the freezer, you know, freeze it, you know, keep it, because that's good evidence, you know. And of course, there was one or two more things, you know, parts of the culture, some of the time, you know. And the Bendick, she picked up debris and different things, you know. And I think at the time, I think it was shared between the two of us, you know. If a single thing, because we both what I call it, through depth charges and we brought it up in the city, you know. And I think, I mean, the lads, you know, I mean, at the time, you know, I mean, they enjoyed it, you know, I mean, because we knew we had got something, you know, because when you're safe for any length of time and you don't hit anything, and you're picking up things, and it's not subs, or it could be wrecks, or it could be shoal fish, whatever things like that. And you used to see yourself, you know, is it worth it? Because one's old fox and the other. And I thought this was happening in our case, which the Germans, you know, with the subs, they were automatically using the coast of our coast, you know, if hey, you know, from us, then it would come out and attack and stuff, you know. But there again, I got the impression that they couldn't get back to base. They were looking for the easiest way out of getting what it could. Grub and oil, whichever they could, you know, at the time. And we had a power over them. We was work up with the convoys disappearing because it was more what are called escort ships came on chasing after subs in the area. And there was a lot of them, there was a terrible lot of subs in the area, you know, because it, later on, you know, I mean, we were picking, what are called, we're seeing subs. Periscopes up and stuff, and the next thing they were disappearing. And they were very clever. They were very clever. Whether they were called, you know, I mean, they knew they couldn't do anything with us. They had no merchant ships to sink. And the only power they had against us was the torpedoes. But at the end of the day, they knew. I think they knew that we had more power and depth charges and more ships. And hadn't much chance, and I see it was a case of they was trying to catch the fox, and it was a hard thing. It was definitely a hard thing, especially when you're dealing with rough seas, and they're below what I call it, the rough seas. And they had more power than what we had, disappearing. We had less because we had to concentrate on the rough seas, and we had much time to think about, you know, different things. They could outfox us, let's put it that way. But at the end of the day, we got a better them, you know. Is, you know, yeah.
There was a war, about, I mean, that's quite near the end, in April. Did you notice anything as the war was coming to an end, or were you aware that it was coming to an end? You mentioned earlier.
Well, we found out that they had to give up, you know. They would have to give up, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, I mean, something was going to happen. And we found out, what I call, at the time, for all we're going around searching for the U-boats in the city, you know, we found out that the, I forgot what it was, the Sunderland flying boats, they were making more use of them. They used to pick up something, and used to direct us in them different spots. But like anything else, you know what I mean? By the time we got there, you know, I mean, they were away. But we found out that as time was getting on, we found out they were moving mostly down into what I call the Bristol Channel, round the Irish coast. With that, they were going to surrender the Southern Island, and not surrender the British. And we moved from the coast of Scotland, farther down. And when we came down, the Southern Island, we found out that we got word to say that they had to surrender. And when word got through, we were surprised to see so many subs come out of the water. It was just like mushrooms disappearing on the surface. And we thought how close we could be in the city there. But they did surrender at the finish in the city there, you know. I don't think I can go any further than that, really, you know what I mean? I can't, you know what I mean? I know things happened to Dingwall, you know. That one, you know.
So, did you have any sort of celebrations when BE Day celebrations?
Well, when we came back, the subs had given up, you know, said, you know, we were given orders for to come back into what I call it, into Polygdorf, Belfast, you know, back in the thing, because what was going to happen was we were told at the time that we probably would have called come in for a get a refit, and it would probably be going out the way they would have called the Japanese, you know, that part that would have called the country in the world for the fight over there. And we had to come in for a refit. We came in and we had a full refit and everything. We're tropical gear, we've got tropical gear, everything was what I called arranged. We've got leave. We've got about 3 weeks leave each at the time, you know. And we're away in the state, you know. And what happened, it was cancelled because of the war in what I called Japan was coming to an end, you know. So that got cancelled out, you know. And what happened was, after that, the ship, what I call it, automatically just stopped and docked. And leave was given again, a second time, for they want to go that one. But what happened was, I would have called it, we had to come to back to this country, and I'm not quite sure, I cannot tell you exactly where it was, but it could have been around about Falmouth, we're doing what you call a victory parade, you know. It was only part of the ship's company, because part of the ship's company was there, the other part of the ship's company was in leave, you know. And we had to do through what I call it on V Day, we would have called marched through
VJ Day or
VE Day, VJ Day was in Japan.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be refitting before VE Day. VE Day is May the 8th.
The VE Day would have called it finished, but the celebrations come. The call to celebration came in between the VA and the VJ. Am I correct? I can't remember. I think they did. Because when the war finished with Germany, we automatically we were sent back in the Polygdorf for a refit, because we didn't know exactly where we were going to go, but we had an idea, because we thought we were going to be sent out to the Far East. You know, but in between aims, they had a victory parade on VE Day in what I call London, in you know, that quarter. And we had to go.
What do you remember of the victory parade?
Well, I'm not quite sure if it was Falmouth, we did the marching, that one, you know, through the town and this and that, you know, round the thing. It's like anything else, I mean, we got that feeling of the war's coming to an end throughout the world, you know. We know the German war was finished. And, well, let's face it, at the time, you know, because everything was free. You know, beer was free, grub was free. And you can imagine the drink that was drunk, you know. And at the end of the day, I don't think many sailors could remember what happened afterwards, you know, because everything was free, you know. And we had big parties, you know, people invite, what would I call it, the houses and this, that, you know, give them a drink, you know. Where it come from, I do not know. But who was paying for it, we did not know. We weren't paying for it. Everything was free. But I think everybody on board the ship, you know what I mean, thought it was a birthday, you know, because everything was given to you. No matter what you asked for, you got, you know. They set you there. And what happened afterwards, I couldn't tell you, because it was one of those things. We knew we was back in Belfast again, you know. How we got back, I do not know, you know.
The final thing was the trip back to the United States with the Calder. Were you on that?
Yes, we were back.
What do you remember of that?
Well, we were told, it was only part of the ship's company would be going, because the other part of the ship's company would be getting demobbed. And with me being a higher number, I mean, my number was 57. That's what demobbed number was, and I can never forget that. Because all the time we'll go to the supermarket, I see it on the buttercourt and tins of beans, 57 varieties, you know. And I think I've sampled every one of them. And that was my demob number. But we went back, we took the ship back to buttercourt to America. And on the way to America, we had a raffle. In other words, is what told is roughly the day, and what part of the day would probably be passing the Statue of Liberty. So what was arranged among the ship's company that was on board a ship was to put a pound into a kitty, and the one that comes the nearest at the time would automatically get the kitty. And of course, like everything else, you know what I mean, it was like a lottery, which went up to day. Everybody had a rough idea what time, midday, but what time it would be. The only person I knew that won the lottery was a skipper. So whether it was Phil or not, I do not know. You know, he must have been, it would have called it, because he was in control of the ship. We couldn't push the ship on, we couldn't stop the ship, but at the end of the day, we always knew the skipper was the one that won the lottery, you know. And, but, anything else, you know, you were glad to get into America.
What about the decommissioning?
Well, what happened was, what happened in Buttercourt, we put alongside a jetty in America, in the, I believe it was Boston, what they called jetty. So what happened was, the Yanks, they automatically brought a big trailer, and it was full of grub, fresh stuff, and it hooked up to the ship. They put hot water for it. It was just like put alongside a big restaurant, you know. Now, everything was free from that, It was like transport coffee. We would call them transport coffee, but it was put on board. It was free. But free was fresh. Fresh water on board, fresh tea and fresh thing. Everything was put on board. And as soon as we pulled up, we were given leave straight away to any part, you know, wanted to go. Because we had no duties. The only duties I had on thing was a clean ship, but that wasn't taking much. So what happened was, we were told if you want to go anywhere, go to Union Jack Club. I believe it was Fifth Avenue, I'm not quite sure. And they would arrange for whatever you wanted to go.